אוקיי. טוב, ערב שבת שלום, פרשת ויחי. So, I decided to, it's certainly halachic, it's certainly a halachic topic, without a doubt. There's going to be less sources today because I want to cover ground and give practical hetzot, because I probably, you know, in my capacity of Rav, one of the, every Rav has his top ten, and you can kind of break up his questions into, you know, different categories. Obviously, one of the most common category of she'elot that come to Rabbanim is that of kashrut. That's a hot topic. Least frequent topic of she'elot, or least, is lashon hara. Yeah, nobody ever asks questions about lashon hara and stuff like that. I shouldn't say never, but like they're a dime a dozen. Probably gotten less than 10 she'elot ever on Hilchot Lashon Hara. So anyway, yeah, no, kashrut is a big thing. So I do want to share with you some kashrut highlights and things to be, and by the way, the kashrut world is a very, very complicated one. Sometimes it gets, you know, it's not a pretty world to be in, to say the least. I'm going to try to, you know, to walk in the path of the Gemara, the beginning of Masechet Pesachim, the beginning of the Bit, that the Torah speaks b'lshon nekiyah. So this shiur will try to speak as much b'lshon nekiyah and b'derech remez, but, you know, daya lechakima b'rmiza. If you're intelligent enough, you should be able to understand most things. And just geographically, you know where I live, and you know where my shul is, and you know where I'm giving shir. So just basically, you just put two and two together and do some geography, and basically you'll understand. But more than that, no, it's not. So, Bekitsur, we are in unprecedented times. Today is actually the 1 year anniversary of the Siyam HaShas, which, you know, I looked back at some pictures that I had from the Siyam HaShas, and it's probably, is a tremendous Kiddush Hashem, unbelievable Kiddush Hashem. I don't think I've ever had such a, you know, the Davin Mincha in Arbit over there. I don't think I've had such a powerful tefillah, kimat ever, davening with, you know, how many people were in MetLife, 100,000? Yeah, something like that. So that's a pretty powerful tefillah, the Kiddush Hashem, the Simcha. And besides for that, you know, just a short 2 months after that, the whole world turned upside down. That was probably the last major human interaction that Kalal Yisrael's had before COVID. So today's exactly 1 year, January 1st. It was Dalet Tevet last year. Anyway, Bekitzur, Mikol Makom, COVID struck everything, and that we know, and we have to be very, very cognizant of that fact. And there, we have to make sure, especially during times like these, one of the hardest hit industries, you know, there's a lot of industries hit by COVID. Every single industry in the world was hit by COVID, especially that of the restaurant industry, and especially if you're in New York City. You know, open, close, inside, outside, 25%, 33%, you know, 13.5% capacity, you know, all these different rules and regulations, not to chalila mock the rules, but sometimes the rules make no sense. But whatever it is, people are suffering. And parnasa is not something to be taken lightly, ever, especially during unprecedented times like these, especially since there's a mitzvah to asay min ha-Torah. V'chei achicha imach, girvetoshav v'chai imach. You have to do things, the Gemara says, avid lemide dechiyuta. You have to do things to actively cause a person to earn parnasa. The Rambam, in Hilchot Matnot Aniyim, as codified by Shulchan Aruch in Hilchot Tzedakah, says that of the eight levels of tzedakah, what's the highest form? Huh? Giving a job, giving him an opportunity to provide himself, to provide for himself. But then it should cover. So you don't have to give him a matana. Give him a job, and you don't have to give him a matana. That's the highest level of tzedakah, even greater than matan basetim, even greater than giving tzedakah when the person doesn't know and you don't know who it's going to. It's even greater. Why? Because you're preventing him from falling onto needing tzedakah. So certainly, there's mitzvah to patronize, and the poskim discuss it. If you have a choice of patronizing a Jewish versus non-Jewish establishment, there's mitzvah aseh different, obviously, price ranges that makes a difference. But if it's equal, certainly the price difference between the Jewish place and the non-Jewish place is negligible. It's a mitzvah to go and patronize the Jewish place. So that's the vaday b'vaday. Now, also very important to take into consideration is that culturally, the restaurant business, fast food, sit-down, dining, whatever, that's a very, very big cultural thing. It's part of Western society. It's not only, you know, because a person needs to eat, a person can eat anywhere, but it's part of the, you know, it's the ambiance, and it's the feeling, and that's what people do in order to celebrate, eat out, order in, cater. It's a very, very big part of the way we live our lives nowadays in the, you know, 21st century. It's a very, very big thing. I want you to understand that many things have changed in the food service industry that do not, and the Aruch HaShulchan Khan speaks about this at length at the end of Yored De'ah, Siman Kuf Yud Tet, speaks about it. And although Midina Gemara, we find that many places the Gemara speaks about it in Kitin, the Bet Amud Bet, in Masechet Ketubot, Daf Ayin Bet Amud Aleph, that a person, Ed Echad Ne'eman B'Yisurim, that according to Torah law, one kosher witness, a person, meaning it's not that he's necessarily giving testimony, but a person who is Shomer Torah Mitzvot has a God-given believability, trustworthiness to him, that what he tells you, this is kosher, this is not, you know, this was nishchat, this was nimlach, this was not. Person has a believability to them. So why is it that we are so makpid, kalak v'chamura Hashem Yisrael on kashrut nowadays? Because there's many, many things that have changed in that, you know, in the way food is prepared, because everything now is commercial. And there's so many things that go on and so many things that are ever changing in the society that we live today, that it's universally required by all the poskim, by all rabbanim everywhere, from the Aruch HaShulchan and on, it is required by halacha nowadays to have a kashrut, to have a recognized symbol of kashrut on a person's, you know, on products, on a person's facility, establishment, store, restaurant, what have you. That is no longer considered a chumrah, but the poskim say it's considered meikar adin nowadays, and there is no place that you go to today that is acceptable without, obviously, you know, barring a person's private home. You know, when you're invited out, you know, a person invites you for Shabbat, where's your tuda? It doesn't work like that. Obviously, over there, that's where the poskim drew the line. But if it's a public food service establishment, if it's something that is meant to serve the public, minhag ha'olam, and that's universally accepted by all poskim today. Moshe speaks about it also in his Tshuvot, that there needs to be some sort of kashrut. Now, that being the case, certainly, certainly, those who are renegade and don't have a book kashrut and don't have any kind of tehudah whatsoever, bevadai, bevadai, it's universally accepted, like we said, not to patronize such establishments, regardless of how from Yiras Shamayim the owner is. Nowadays, an owner, now again, believe me, the opposite is not true, okay? But nowadays, however Yiras Shamayim an owner is, if he doesn't have a Terudat Kashrut, if he doesn't have respectable Kashrut supervision over his establishment, that's a Reyesa in his Yiras Shamayim. That shows that he's really not Yiras Shamayim. Why? Because Yirat Shamayim would be to conform to the edicts set by the Rabbanim and the Poskim who require Kashrut. And if a person is reliant only on his own Yirat Shamayim in a place that he serves food to the public, that is not a show of his Yirat Shamayim. That's a show that he's not able to conform and he doesn't accept the halakha that's muskam today by everybody. And therefore, that's a red flag. Not to say, this is what I mean, the other way around, not to say that every place that has a tehudat kashrut automatically makes the owner or whoever it is Yiras Shamayim. That's obviously not the way it works. Tehudat kashrut just means one thing. You conform to what is universally accepted in the world of kashrut by the poskim today, and that's what you're supposed to do. Okay? That's step one. Now, once you have it, but we also have to point out that especially in different communities and everybody knows, you know, obviously there's no one size fits all standard for kashrut, and different agencies, different kashrut organizations are better than others. That goes without saying. Some are much better than others, some are a little better than others, and some are bottom of the barrel, some are not reliable, and everybody, obviously, we can't go into names and details and whatever, because right? Certainly, this is not the forum to discuss names. You know, as a disclaimer, everybody needs a rub, and you need to, you know, a rub, nowadays, there are different kinds of rabbanim. Nowadays, part of being a rub, besides for sitting down and learning and teaching and writing Torah, which is obviously the role of a rav, because if there's no Torah, Torah is the basis for everything else. Chokhmat Torah, erudition in Torah, is the basis for everything else, because you can't be a rav without being a Torah scholar. That goes without saying. But part of the job today, because of the generation that we find ourselves in, is that a rav has to be, you know, Torah scholar, shadchan, marriage counselor, you know, he has to wear many, many hats. One of the many hats that a rav has to wear today.
Mock master.
We're not getting into colors of hats, but just. How do you mute? Not me. How do you mute others?
No.
I did it, yeah. Yeah, I got it. Yeah. You're by all muted. Anyway, Bekitsu, it's not nice. Hashem doesn't mute us. You know, it's not nice. No, has to be Rahman. Can you imagine us? Hashem never gets sick of us and pushes mute on us. Kadosh Baruch Hu Ohev Otanu. Even when we, you know, we annoy him and we sin against him and we rebel against him, he says, Beseder. And he says, okay, I'll still accept your tefillah. So it's very hard to mute others. But sometimes bothers the shir. Anyway, Bekitsur, so a rav also, one of the hats that he needs to wear nowadays is kashrut expert. Unfortunately, people look at rabbanim, especially many times those who, you know, unfortunately, sometimes there's a mistaken perception that rabbanim are book smart, but not necessarily street smart. A rav who's only book smart and not street smart, will not be very successful in his job. Because being a real rav and manhig and posek requires a fusion of both of these elements. Being smart on paper, meaning being smart b'chokhmat Torah, and part of being smart b'chokhmat Torah, we already have this, you know, in our DNA from Yaakov Avinu, is, you know, you have to know how to be street smart as well. Yaakov Avinu dealt with a lot of crooked people in Islam. Esav, Lavan, Shechem, v'chamor Aviv, right? He had to deal with a lot of stuff. And Yaakov Avinu, we learned from him that part of Midat HaEmet is knowing how to deal with everybody and not to let yourself be taken for a ride and not to let yourself be, you know, don't be naive. Yaakov Avinu was the furthest thing from naive. And yet, Yaakov Yishtam Yishim Alim. How did he get so street smart? How is he able to deal with such people like Lavan and Isav and stuff like that? And every time he had to deal with these people, he dealt with them masterfully. They tried to take advantage of him, and boom, you see him protecting himself and getting rich on their hishbon. How does that work? That comes from Chokhmat Torah. That's real Chokhmat Torah. So Rabbanim are anything but naive. Okay, so first, let's get that out. Now, you have to realize that gone with the wind are those days that a person can naively see a teudah on a door, see a kashrut certificate on a door, and say, wow, you know, there's a paper with Hebrew letters or something with the title of rabbi on the door or whatever, it must be okay. That's being naive, and that's ostrich. You know, ostrich theory, digging your head in the sand, that's just being dumb. Rabotai, like I said, the kashrut industry, and I'm speaking from experience because in my capacity, I Baruch Hashem, I have a lot of friends and a lot of, you know, very, very sensitive positions. And I hear a lot. And, you know, we can't be ostriches. Person has to wake up And not only that, some kashrut certificates on some windows, obviously without mentioning names, sometimes that's even more alarming than not having a kashrut certificate to begin with. Sometimes not seeing anything in a window, okay, whatever, that's like zero. Sometimes seeing a certain kashrut certificate in the window brings them down into negative. That's not a red flag. That's like a, it's a white flag, flag of surrender. Anyway, about mikol makom, all jokes aside, you have to know. And, you know, we live in a situation that you can't always, there are better, there are worse. You know what I'm saying? In the meantime, Badate the Charedis of Yerushalayim, just as an example, a restaurant isn't available in the New York tri-state area. You know what I'm saying? Not to say that there are plenty of good kashruyot available in the tri-state area. But you know what? We live in a society where sometimes we're stuck in a situation that we might not have necessarily availability of the best kashrut. So what do you do? In situations, you have to go out, and inevitably, everybody will have to go out, you know, whether it's shopping for Shabbat, or whether it's buying groceries for the house, or whether it's going out to a family affair, or to a simcha that's catered, or whatever. There are so many things, you know, just, you can't avoid it. Best thing would be, best case scenario, eating in your house with raw materials that you made on your own all the time, whatever. But this is not Amish country. You know, we don't live in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and we don't churn our own butter, and we don't do all that stuff. So you have to, that's where they live, right? In Lancaster? Next to Hershey, right? They do, I think so. Anyway, Bekitsu, you know, that was Chadesh Yamenu Kekeder. Those days are over. You have to know, I'm going to give you certain tips and certain things that are, you know, you can't give a blanket statement, okay, this is okay. There are, you have to discuss with your Rav, with your Rebbe, which, first of all, which kashruyot are accepted and which are not. And every single Rav under the sun that identifies with Orthodox Judaism has such a list, whether it's a written list or a, you know, a verbal list, Torah Shebichtav, Torah Shebe'akpeh, whatever it is, everybody knows, every Rav has this list, and he tells us, tell me, you know, certain kashruyot, certain kashrus agencies are good, certain ones are not to be relied upon, certain ones are not really to be relied upon, but there are certain exceptions to the rule. You have to know. Rabotai, let me explain to you one thing. In general, if you live in such a place where the kashrut is not up to par, and everybody knows, you know, just like everything else in Judaism, you have to follow the Ayne Ha'eda, the Zikne Rabbanim, the Rabbanim with the most Chokhmat Torah, the Rabbanim with the most experience, the Rabbanim who are poskim, the Rabbanim who are most accepted. Now, and they know, and you know, not to obviously avoiding Lashon Hara and avoiding Machloket and whatever, but at the end of the day, Judaism very much believes in you are what you eat. Many times, and you know, the poskim speak about this, people wonder why they have a hard time connecting with the Torah. They wonder why they have a hard time understanding Torah. They wonder sometimes why they're not enthusiastic or excited about Torah mitzvot. They wonder why their spiritual life is just blah. You know what blah means? Just can't connect. And many times the reason for that is because of timtum halev. Timtum halev is a spiritual blockage of the heart that comes from one thing only. It's something that's very interesting. Out of the 365 averot of the Torah, mitzvot lo ta'aseh, timtum halev applies only to averot that are ingested, averot that can only be eaten and drunk. That's what we call ma'achalot asurot. That's the only thing timtum halev can come from. It's very interesting. Vadai. So now, even the Rabbanans, sure, there's Timtum HaLev for the Rabbanans also. There's a very famous Tshuva in Rav Pe'alim, Big Machloket HaPoskim, whether even for Onis, if a person consumes Ma'achalot HaSurot, this came up, you know, the famous Munsey chicken scandal. This was about, 15, 20 years ago. Yeah, so that was Ones Gamur, because the person was Yirei Shamayim, and there was, you know, there was a Teuda, and you know what? Even in spite of all that, things can still happen. That's why I have to be vigilant. There was a question back then, after all the, you know, the Teshuvah and Kapara and Kashering and everything, there's a Shaila about Timtum Alev. Munsey chicken scandal, there was a Yirei Shamayim guy, Ben Torah, he was a Shliach Tzibur, he was Ba'al Tokea, he had a Hechsher or whatever, and he was selling Purdue chickens. Very possible. Pray. Huh? No, but I know him. Huh? Yeah. People assumed him to be Rishama. You know, whether he's Chozer B'Tshuva, that's a different story. This guy sold Nevelot U'Trefot, Na'am Yisrael. Yeah.
Really quick question.
What?
Could I ask a quick question or no questions?
Just let me. Who's that?
Yitzchak. Quick.
Just give me one second. Let me just try to finish this thing. Well, you know, if need be, we'll take it at the end. Hopefully, I'll try to answer everything. But whatever it is, the Ben Yishchai discusses whether or not onis, that's called an extenuating circumstance, a circumstance beyond one's control. They did everything in their power to be mehadir b'kashrut, and they ended up eating, consuming nevelot u'trefot. Does that cause timtum alev? It's machlokta poskim, whether or not timtum alev, spiritual blockage of the heart, it depends on what? It depends if it's a punishment or a result, cause and effect. If it's a punishment, then what? Onis rachamana patre. If it's cause and effect, you eat poison, even if you didn't mean to, you get sick or die. That's the way it works. No, but I didn't mean to. Yeah. So the Ben Yishchai ends off that there is no timtum alev for onis. That's his maskana, his old tshuva about it. There's a lot of literature. Okay, but putting that aside for a second. Huh? It's in the body. The ma'achalot asurot cause tremendous negative effects. Rabotan. For a person who lives in a place that has, and you know, to a certain extent, you have to be vigilant everywhere you go, like we said before. Especially if the kashrut in your area is known to be subpar. Now, sometimes you can't really control it, because sometimes you're in a place where you live in an area where the kashrut is subpar. Rabbanei ha'eda, Sfaradim and Ashkenazim are telling you that it's subpar. It's run in a way that is dysfunctional. There are violations left and right. What is one supposed to do? Not always can you go to, you know, not always if you live in, you know, different places, you can't always go shopping for groceries in Lakewood. Okay, you can't travel to Yerushalayim or to Bnei Brak to buy food for Shabbat. You know, there are, and Manasseh. So you can always rely on this Esfahani on Peru. So he says like this. Who's Bucks?
Sorry?
Bucks.
Oh, it's Jack in the Streets.
Who is it? Who is it? Who are they?
They're
Why?
What?
What do they do?
The
are they good?
Not that good.
Okay, who says that? So, the Kitsur, Rabotai. Yeah? I want to tell you something. So you go, under the surface, you have to understand one. You go to a place, a Teuda, Teudat Kashrut, a Kashrut certification on the window, is only as good as the Mashgiach in the store. A Mashgiach in the store is only as good as the kashrut that he represents. Okay? You have to remember. If you have a mashgiach that is oblivious and incompetent, then, you know, that's not worth much. Yeah. So now, no. So listen to this. Rabotai. If you have a mashgiach that's incompetent, usually the gauge to eat in any given establishment is, would I be comfortable in eating in the Mashgiach's house? There's only one way to find out. You know how that is? You got to talk to him. Sometimes, if the Mashgiach, if the Mashgiach is, you're making me mikubad. If the Mashgiach is incompetent. You can't carry on a conversation with him. Either you can't speak the language with him, or you're asking him questions, very simple questions. Again, mashgichim do not have to be gdolei hador. That's not a job requirement, okay? However, they need to be like any other job. They need to be proficient in their trade. Just like you wouldn't go to a mechanic who's doesn't know how to fix cars, and you wouldn't go to a jeweler who, you know, doesn't know what the GIA stands for. So you wouldn't go to a restaurant where the mashgiach doesn't know simple, he can't answer simple questions. Case in point, I'll give you an example. It's always a good idea to call first. It's always a good idea to call an establishment first and ask, you know, what are your standards? Or what meat do you use? What poultry do you use? Everybody, and that, again, you need that list from your rabbanim also. What's in your kehillah, what's considered acceptable for you, right? Bet Yosef versus Glad. Yashan versus non-Yashan. Halav Yisrael versus, Halav Stam. Pat Yisrael versus Pat Palteh. These are all decisions that you and your family and your kehillah and your rabbanim make for yourself. And that's perfectly fine. The most important thing is that the kashrut organization is A, they don't necessarily have to be makpid on every chumrah in the book. You know what? Not every kashrut is makpid over every chumrah in the book. And not every great kashrut organization is machmir on every chumrah. But you know what has to be true of every great kashrut organization? Transparency. That's the most important name thing. And if you have real kashruyot, are transparent. If a kashrut is not transparent, if they're not open about their standards, if they are not willing to open up and let other people, let other rabbanim in to see, or even laymen just to see their operations, then that means that they automatically have something to hide. And it's like that in, guess what? It has nothing to do with kashrut. That's in any industry in the world. Transparency, people appreciate transparency. Transparency is a sign of honesty. It's a sign of integrity. Trying to not be transparent, you know, that a lack of transparency usually happens in communist regimes. You know, you won't find a lot of transparency in China, North Korea, other communist regimes in the world because they need to have control. Transparency and control are polar opposites. Understand that? So that's one thing. Number two, you asked the Mashgiach a question, I told you I would tell you an example. Somebody, I got this shayla this week, somebody called up a local establishment, asked to speak to the Mashgiach. Okay? He asked to speak to the Mashgiach, he says, can you tell me what company poultry you use? This is a real life example that happened 2 days ago. Okay? Mashgiach's on the phone. The Mashgiach says, we use Springfield poultry. That was the answer. Rabotai, can you Google Springfield poultry for a second? Those were exactly the words that the Mashgiach said, Springfield poultry. Can you look up Spring?
Yeah. Halal.
Yes, it's a halal company. Think that's an issue? Let me explain something to you. Springfield, there is a kosher meat purveyor and distributor called Springfield Kosher Meat Distributors. They distribute this company called Springfield. Okay. Now I'm just saying the name. There's many kosher distributors out there. And they, I don't know where they are, but anyway, they distribute many different companies of glatt kosher meat, chicken, poultry, whatever. Many, many different companies. That answer, however, is very, very disturbing. And the meat and the chicken in that store might be and probably is okay. But what's the issue here? What does that show you? That's what we call in yeshiva. It's not a siba, it's a simen. It's a siman that the mashgiach is not on top of his game. That's a stupid answer. It's a dumb answer. So now, one second. So now listen very carefully. That in and of itself, even if things were okay in that store, that would be a sign of alarm, for me at least, because that shows, one second, the Mashgiach is not on top of his game. You have to get normal answers to the questions that you're asked. Whether or not, now first of all, just by speaking to a person, you can tell if he's honest or not. So assuming that the Mashgiach is honest, nice, Yirei Shamayim person, if the Mashgiach is not Yirei Shamayim, or, you know, if the Mashgiach looks like, doesn't look like he's somebody that should be acting in that capacity, that's a different problem. But even if he is Yirei Shamayim, or looks Yirei Shamayim, and you can have a conversation with him, he needs to be, you know, on top of his game. What company poultry do you use? And then he gives you examples. I'm not saying, you know, this is not an endorsement of any companies. But he says, okay, for example, we use Empire, we use KJ, we use Marvin. Those are legitimate Glatt Kosher poultry companies. What company meat do you use? Okay, so I'll tell you. We have, you know, we use Solomon's, we use Ali, we use whatever. Those are legitimate answers. Now, do you have Bet Yosef? Do you provide Bet Yosef? Either yes or no. Do you separate the Bet Yosef from the Glatt? Yes or no. What companies of Bet Yosef do you use? Now, another Mashgiach has to be prepared to answer questions. Sometimes, and this has happened also, you call a store, ask to speak to the Mashgiach, and he says, what's with all the questions? We're kosher. That's also a bad sign. Lack of transparency. That happens a lot also. So what's with all the questions? Why are you pressured? Why do questions bother you? Why are you not prepared to answer simple questions? Any other industry you go to, you don't buy things blindly. When you go to buy anything from anything, yeah, whether it's in person, online, anytime you buy anything from Amazon, what's the first thing you check about the product? Well, besides for the price.
Reviews,
description, right? All these, it's a very normal practice. Why in the world should kashrut, which is varin she'omdim berumosh el olam, because if you eat something that is not according to, that is not kosher, that is not allowed to be eaten according to halacha, you will become spiritually blocked. Okay? You will. You will not be able to enjoy Torah mitzvot. You will not be able to understand Torah. You will not get a gishmak. You will not enjoy and be excited from Torah. Right? And that can happen. That's bad enough for a person. That's something that a person can actively be feeding his children. Why is it not appropriate to be asking legitimate questions? If people get nervous, if a kashrut agency or their mashgiach, which is their representative, their ambassador on the field, gets nervous from questions, it's a very, very, very telling story. It's very bad. It's ominous. Yeah. Floating mashgiach, meaning a mashgiach that is not tamidi.
Yeah.
So, depends. It's a very broad question. In certain establishments, it's acceptable. In certain establishments, it's not. It depends on several factors. Meat versus dairy. Religious status of the owner. Cameras versus not. There's no one size fits all standard for every establishment. And that's why you need a reliable kashrut industry, a reliable kashrut agency, I apologize, to set those standards and to have, and not, it's not only mashgichim that are important, right? There's also mifakhim, which are there's the people in the stores, and then there's higher ups, the people who, they're called RC, rabbinic coordinators, people who walk around and are mashgiach on the mashgichim. And then there has to be good communication between them and between the Rosh HaKashrut, the person signing the Teudot, the Rav calling the shots, the Rav paskening the shilas, the man. That's the excellent communication. Now, yeah. What do you mean? He doesn't know what the term bit. Well, it could be. It really depends. If he doesn't know the term Bet Yosef, it's probably not Bet Yosef, and that's at this point. If the Mashgiach doesn't know, again, you don't know in. The Mashgiach doesn't, if he does, it's a plus. But I don't think the Mashgiach has to know where to find Bet Yosef and Shulchan Aruch. He doesn't have to tell you. Most people think that it has to do with Shchita. It has nothing to do with Shchita. It has to do with Trefo. has to do with sichut. Most people don't understand it. And you know what? There's plenty of Talmidei Chachamim that don't know all the intricacies of what Bet Yosef versus non-Bet Yosef is. The Kulot versus the Chumrot of Maran and the Rama in Sirchot and Trefot HaRe'ah. So again, but if he doesn't know the term Bet Yosef, no good. Now, if he doesn't, depends why he doesn't know what Bet Yosef is. Maybe sometimes they'll tell you, well, listen, I know what Bet Yosef is. When it comes in, we get some Bet Yosef and some regular Glat non-Bet Yosef. And it gets mixed up together, and therefore I don't know. That's a legitimate answer. That's fine. Huh? Because maybe they don't have enough demand, or they don't care enough to separate it, because again, most commercial hashgachot nowadays are Ashkenazim. And therefore, they're not catering to Sephardi standards. And guess what? For many of the friends that I have in the kashrut industry, Sephardic standards is a very big plus. You know, we shouldn't necessarily be shooting to upgrade kashrut standards to Sephardi standards. Okay, because Sephardi standards is, I'm not going to say it's a chumrah, it's a lechafra. But that's a giant leap. You know, Neil Armstrong, 1969, he landed on the moon. He said, one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind. Right, that was his, nowadays, the word mankind is not politically correct, so we have to say humankind. Right? It's not, anyway, because we have to be culturally sensitive. But anyway,
yeah, Rabbi, can a woman be mashkiach?
That's a very.
I went to a restaurant in Queens. I asked to speak to mashkiach. This lady comes up.
Well, sometimes you have to know. According to the letter of the law, did she seem from?
I don't know. Now I called the kashrut, and he told me that yeah, she's half owner, so we let her cover sometimes.
Yeah. Anyway, again, it's there is no end to the, you know, everybody has their fair. It's not only me. I get a lot because a lot of people call me. But, you know, plenty of people have their fair share of kashrut horror stories. And guess what? There's plenty of kashrut success stories, too. You don't really hear too much about them. There's plenty of kashrut that work well. But there's plenty of kashrut that are just completely dysfunctional and non-entities. They're just, you know, control, alt, delete. So you have to realize. And I'm going to take questions in a second. This is a very loaded thing. According to the letter of the law, can a woman be mashgiach? If she's Yiddish Shamayim and she knows what she's doing, yes. Yeah, in Judaism, we learn, actually, the Gemara derives the law of Edechad Ne'eman Bisuim from women. The Gemara says, Masechet Ketubot, Afayin Bet Amud Aleph, V'safir Allah, says the Gemara, V'safir Allah, it's talking about there's ziva, la le'atma, yeah, for Taharat HaMishpacha, a woman doesn't need to bring Edim or Shvuot or video cameras or Zed that she's Torah. The Torah gives her Ne'emanut. The Torah says she's Ne'eman. There's certain times she can't play games. Yeah, Shulchan Aruch, Yored Da'a, Siman, Kuf Pehe, right? Over there, Dine Amtela. Sometimes a woman can play, if she plays games, she can lose that Ne'emanut. And guess what? If by Taharat HaMishpacha you can lose Ne'emanut, by Kashrut you can lose Ne'emanut, by anything you can really lose Ne'emanut. But the Torah gives it. Now, I do want to point out, there are so many things to be careful about in general. Now, this is not something that has to do with one Kashrut or another. There are, you know, even in good Kashrut, it's known that many times nowadays, bug checking standards, you know, we're talking about Bdikat Tola'im, you know, all sorts of worms and insects and, you know, all sorts of things like that. Many times places are not up to par. And therefore, as a general rule, even if the mashgiach is good, many times they're not trained enough, forget about the halachot, but in the art of cleaning produce. So unless you know other ones, again, it's a very tough statement, but many times the greens in certain establishments can be much trafer than the chicken or meat. You have to realize that. Again, people, huh? Yeah, I mean, 60 swimming depends what kind. Depends if it walks, swims, or flies. Anyway, Bikitsu, yeah, swimming is 4, walking is 5, flying is 6. Anyway, or they don't really walk or crawl or kind of, you know, slither, whatever it is that they. 11. Now, so he says like this, and that's each bug. And many times, you know, it's an art. You know, there are certain methods of produce checking and cleaning that work, and most do not. You have to realize it's not. There's no gray area. It's either there are bugs or there are not. Now in halacha, sometimes you do have to be choshesh. Sometimes you do not have to be choshesh. There are halachot. There's a whole siman. But by and large, even good mashkichim, many times they are insufficiently trained in the art of checking. That's why many top kashrut establishments require, because of this hashash, they require their establishments to use greens specifically under certain kashrut, greenhouse grown, you know, specific, meticulously checked, ones with good hashgachot. You know, that's a sign of a good kashrut, because they don't want to get involved in these isurim. No. So now, unless there's obvious signs of infestation, but that's a different story. You do have to investigate that, because even this week I've gotten she'elot where people, you know, and this is especially in places where the hashgachot are not up to par. Many times, you know, because remember, like we said, the establishment is only as good as the mashgiach, and the mashgiach is only as good as the enforcement. Sometimes you have a kashrut, but they just don't enforce, or maybe they don't care, or maybe they're just not on top of their game. Many times the place will say, all yashan, and I've experienced this myself. Everything's yashan. Lies. Many times. Now again, maybe it's because the kashrut doesn't care about yashan, and because they're not primarily catering to Sfaradim, but it's not only a kashrut question, it's a kashrut question, it's a tumtum amit question, it's a choshen mishpat question. Because if you tell me that everything's yashan and I buy it because of that, and it's not, you are a gazlan, and you will come back to this world as a donkey because you lied and I spent money on something that you nothing to do with kashrut, right? You are going to come back eeing and awing in different gilgulim because you lied. Now, anyway, bekitzur. So many times it happens a lot. Rabotai, listen very carefully. It happens many, many times. If you are makpin on yashan, I got news for you, Rabotai. If you're makpin on yashan, the flour and the baked goods may be yashan, but many times the things that they fry are not yashan. And everything fried in that oil, even if it's, yeah, you take something hadash and you fry it in oil, okay? So I'm not going to eat that product. But then they take regular fries, just regular potatoes, and fried in the same oil. Those fries are now hadash isur Torah. That's called ta'am ke'ikar. That's kashrut 101. Okay, chulin sadizan amubit. Anyway, and there's machloket rishonim da'at maran in yored de'a siman tzaditet ta'am ke'ikar deoraita derabanan deoraita kedat keshitat rabenutam da'at maran kerabenutam. So over there, the fries would be 100% hadash, and many times there's many things that they fry in there that are not yashan, unless they're making everything in house. And these are things, yeah, pizza is yashan. Pizza is yashan doesn't mean the whole store is yashan. These are very, very common things that just fall through the cracks, and people are misled, and people don't know. You have to ask. When you say yashan, I see menus of people, kemach yashan. Wonderful. What about your fried store? I don't know. Chalav Yisrael. What about different things? What about your butter? But it says it on the menu. Who cares? But it says this and that kashrut organization. They don't care. They're not enforcing. Just because, that's what I'm trying to say. Teuda on the wall, you cannot take it for granted. You must do your homework. You're going to a place. You have to know. What chicken are you using? What meat are you using? Is it Bishul Yisrael, Maran, Rama, Yabi Omer, or Letzion? Which shita of Bishul Yisrael? Yeah? Now, is it, what about if you're having a delivery? Many times this happens. If it's a delivery, was it sealed in a way that prevents the isurim of basar shalita alem min ha'ayin? Do you know that there are other things even there? It's a shulchan aruch meforash. In siman, yored de'a siman kuf yutchet. Not only meat requires simanim. Meat requires two simanim, two chotamot. Guess what? Cheese and bread requires one. Halacha meforeshet in shulchan aruch. Sometimes they'll send pizza boxes home. Where's the one siman on that? Did they seal it with kosher tape? Did they seal it with the tape from the, you know, many times? These are Where are you? Not you, but where? Huh? It, this, I'm not. Huh? One tape that the Goy wouldn't have access to. Only the Mashgiach should have access to. That would serve as a siman. Or some b'di'avad, it's very easy to find the tarim for a lot of things. But not easy, but you can. But even the chatz, that's a different story. But anyways, Rabotai, what I want to say is before I end for today, yeah, I'm coming. But you have to realize, and many times when you call certain kashriyot, a good kashrut will be on top of their game and know these things. And even if they mess up, if you bring it to their attention, they will fix it. A bad kashrut, the signs of a bad kashrut are, they will not be on top of their game, A. B, when you bring things to their attention, they will sweep it under the rug. They will tell you that it's being looked into. It won't happen again. It's being rectified. And you see time and time again, years later, that the same kashrut violations keep on happening and keep on happening. That means that kashrut is not reliable. That's all it means. A good kashrut doesn't mean that they don't make mistakes. Mistakes happen everywhere. But when mistakes happen, they must be addressed. When you call a kashrut and they try to cover it up and they say, no, it didn't really happen. You know, there's probably some sort of misunderstanding. Or it happened, we'll fix it, and it never gets fixed. Those are simanim. Those are eye-openers. You know, Abraham Lincoln once said, he was a wise man. He said, you can fool some of the people all of the time, and you can fool all of the people some of the time. You cannot fool all of the people all of the time. Okay? People have to realize, and everybody understands this. When you look at the general public as stupid, when you look at them as naive, you will fail. I'm not only talking about in terms of Ahavat Yisrael, people are not stupid. Especially Am Yisrael, Am Chacham V'Nagon. HaKadosh Baruch Hu endowed us with Chochmah Bina V'Da'at. People who think that the general populace is not going to catch on, is not going to understand, they don't, you know, the lower standards are okay for them anyway. Who are you? You're not chashuv enough to demand higher standards. Those are all things. Those are all perspectives and ideas that will lead any given agency to failure. Understand? Am Yisrael, again, we're not perfect, but we have the right to demand higher standards. And guess what? Economics 101. You know how the world goes round? You know what business relies on? Supply and demand. And guess what? Eventually, if there's enough of a demand and the supply is not being met, they're going to go out of business. You can push for it. You can ask for it. You are the consumer. You can ask any question you want. What company poultry do you use? What company meat do you use? Is your meat Bet Yosef or not? Do you have Bishul Yisrael? Can you provide you with Bishul Yisrael? What shita do you use to check your bugs? Do you mind if I check your produce? Or recheck your produce? What else? Do you keep Kemach Yashan? Do you mind if I check your, you know, do you mind if anybody, especially if you have a large event, you know, who said it's Yashan? What about your fryer? If you see them getting nervous, if you see them beginning to tick as a result of your questions, that's bad news. People who can answer your questions honestly, calmly, and provide you with good answers, especially if you know, that's what I'm trying to say, in spite of any given to that kashrut, it's always a good thing. It's so important to know the owner, to know him personally, or to see him in action, to see his level of care and concern about kashrut, to see his level of Yiddishkeit, to see his level of Frumkeit, to see the Mashgiach in action, to be able to converse with them. These things are so important. To the extent that I would venture to say that very rarely is it okay or even acceptable to walk in blindly and order anything from any given establishment. In this generation, you must educate. Every consumer must educate themselves. Ask your rav, call kashruyot, call kashrut professionals. what is acceptable, what is not, what is reliable, what is not, what standards should we be striving for. Don't be afraid to demand it. Do not be bullied into submission. Don't let anybody tell you everything's fine. Everything's fine is not an adequate answer. Okay? So that's basically, you know, I didn't get into specifics, but I gave you, you know, bullet points to begin asking. You know what to ask. Now you know what to ask. Now you know what you can ask for and what you should. Again, you have to realize that all the things that I told you are emet la'amita shel Torah. This I'm telling you, bekeev gadol, and with a lot of experience in the field. Okay? So that's and anybody who, you know, covers up or doesn't want to give you or gives you crazy answers or doesn't know the answer to basic, it's not fair to call a restaurant and to ask to speak to the Mashgiach and start grilling them on Shachan Tazes in Yuradeon. It's not fair. That's not fair. I'm not saying that. I'm saying just basic Kashrut questions. If you don't get answers, run for the hills. And if you keep on seeing that happen in different establishments with the same Kashrut, that's a siman, not a siba. Remember that. You wanted to ask a question. I'm sorry, you waited patiently. Go ahead. Okay. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Is he in general, when it is Yashan, it should indicate it. But is he from Jew? Shomer Torah Mitzvot? According to the letter of the law, you can. Would you be out of bounds to say, yeah, again, different people have different comfort zones. Do you know what flour you use? Do you know what company flour? Because guess what? Those who are Matkud and Yashan have two tools at their disposal. You can find out in about 30 seconds whether or not it's true. You have the Yashan guide, you have the Yashan app, you have the Yashan website. So, transparency is the name of the game. According to the letter of the law, can you rely on him? Probably. Yeah. Should you ask further? Your choice. Especially if it doesn't say Kemach Yashan on it. If it says Kemach Yashan on it, does it mean it's necessarily Kemach Yashan? Depends what agency you're talking about. And I say that with the greatest tzar. Amen. I'm not bashing whatever, but like Shlomo HaMelech says in Kohelet, Hechacham, Einav Birosho. Yeah? Keep your eyes in your head, not your stomach. Yes. Yes. Yes.
Has a very good name.
Yes.
Still ask this question.
That's a good question. If the agency is reliable and you're Rebbein and the consensus of Rabbanim is that they are, now again, to know if any given, this is another rule, to know if any given agency, we said this before, but I want to say it clear. To know if any given agency is reliable, you have to ask the local Rabbanim and Poskim. If the local Rabbanim and Poskim say they're reliable, they're reliable. Does that mean you should not be asking questions? Absolutely not. Why? Because not necessarily. There's no one-size-fits-all standards for everyone. They could be a good kashrus organization. They may not be makpid on Bet Yosef. They may not be makpid, as a matter of standing. They may not be makpid on Yashan. They may not be makpid on Yishuv Yisrael, Nida Achmanan. And these are things that you want to be makpid on. You're well within, you can ask any question you want. Okay? So does that mean you should still not buy blindly? I think so. You should still ask. I ask questions all the time. Okay?
And you said
once in a while, because things can always change. You know what I'm saying? So that's another thing. I think it's very
Can the owner be the Mashgiach himself?
No. That's a conflict of interest. That's a very simple answer. In general, no. Sometimes there are certain exceptions in dairy places with the Yotzev Nichnas. That's usually the call. But if the only mashgiach in the place, the only form, you know, the only neshama in the place is the owner, then that's a little alarming. That's not something that is common. That's not something that's usually acceptable in the kashrut world. We'll take another question.
What if the place has cameras?
Again, you have to know. Kol mikre legufo. Every situation, every establishment has to be, there's no cookie cutter rule. You have to see, you have to look into it. You can call the Ashgacha if you rely on Ashgacha, if you trust them, and then make your own decision. But in general, a Mashgiach has to be present, especially in a meat establishment. There needs to be, in general, most reliable kashriyot will require a Mashgiach Tamidi, an on-site full-time Mashgiach. Yeah, one second. We'll take another question from the Zoom.
I can ask a question, Rabbi?
Yes.
A person who was asked if he's allowed to eat in a certain restaurant, is it Lashon Hara when you tell them that they're not up to the kashrut standards? Or is it Lifnei Iver that you have to tell him?
Do you know firsthand or by hearsay?
No, it's most of the Rabbanim in the community will not eat in that place. And this person has been caught countless times bringing in stuff that is not reliable.
Not for some reason this. Don't exaggerate, but not Lashon Hara. You're asked. And you, so first of all, there's different, sometimes people just like to stoke the flames. Oh, they're going to go eat anyway, regardless of what you said. So if he's going to go, if you know he's the kind of person to go eat there anyway, so go fly a kite. What do you want from me? Why do I have to get involved? But if he's asking your opinion because he wants to listen to you and he will take your opinion into consideration, there's a mitzvah, lo ta'amod al dam ra'echa. You can't stand idly by your friend's blood. Yeah? So if it's a place that's not reliable, and Rabbanim, Poskim, you know, people who have experience know that the place is not reliable, you have a chiyuv to tell him, the place is not reliable, period. And that's where the conversation ends.
What is the split within the Rabbanim? Some Rabbanim will buy meat here, some Rabbanim will not buy meat there. That's already according to your local Rav, or is it like, because sometimes people ask you, they go, you're more of a religious guy, where can I buy meat from? It's a very hard question to answer.
That is a very difficult question to answer. You got to say, you know, buddy, you got to find yourself a Rav and stick to whatever he says. Okay. And if he doesn't have a Rav, another very diplomatic way to answer the question without saying this is good, this is no good, is if you're asking me, I personally buy from X, Y, and Z. Nothing wrong with that. Understand? That's another, you know, you got to be also diplomatic. You gotta be very, very careful with people's parnasa. So parnasa is of paramount importance, but it's also of paramount importance not to be machshil people to buy in a place that's not up to par. You know, it's to be very careful. Yeah, Ariel, one last question before we go to the Dvartar.
Like very...
Don't say anything. You know, don't say any names, nothing.
I was going to say names, why?
Okay. Okay.
Hello. I definitely have that time. So. This restaurant in Greatness, the owners in Mashiach.
Okay.
Why is that okay? Is they cook in the shul or?
I don't know. That's what I said. In general, Rabotai, in general, I'm telling you standards, very basic standards in the kashrus world. Again, there may be exceptions to certain things. And even in the kashrus world, there are, I can't get into all the exceptions right now. In general, it's a meat establishment. Meat or dairy. If in a meat establishment, it is accepted for there to be a mashgiach midi. If the owner is a frum Jew, sometimes with cameras and stuff like that, sometimes there will be accommodations for a yotzev nichnas with a frum owner who's on site all the time. He's called a ne'eman kashrut. He is trusted by the kashrut organization. So sometimes, but that's not the norm. The norm is, again, there's always mitzvah nechlal. That's why it's not fair to say a blanket rule. Everything needs a mashgiach midi. Nothing needs a mashgiach midi. It doesn't...
Does the frum owner need to have good midot?
Absolutely. Shomer Torah mitzvot and good midot. And good midot. Yeah, one last question.
The supermarket has a mashgiach.
Yes.
Store baked products.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You don't have to check the stuff coming in, but you have to have standards, like packet, you know, you have to have, if a supermarket is under Hashgacha, the Hashgacha has to tell the supermarket, okay, you are only allowed to bring in products with A, B, C, D, E, F, G, Hashgachot, and not Yeah, XYZ has to go. Checking what? I don't know. I think that's the general rule. And guess what? You know, if you find a product with a inferior hashgacha in the store, so you bring it to the mashgiach's attention, and they remove it from the shelves. You know, the mashgiach usually has to check invoices for meat, chicken, things of that nature. He's not standing there, you know, checking, you know, inboxes for cereal and for oatmeal and for, you know, paper plates. You know what I'm saying? That's not.
Rabbi,
when do you talk to the mashgiach? You talk to the mashgiach when there's something on site that can be rectified quickly, or when there's something, when there's an immediate question that you need an answer for. If you see something that's a deeper problem, something that looks like it's not only an isolated incident, then you call the hashgacha.
Rabbi?
Yes.
Well, last question. Isn't there a problem? This is Yaakov Ben Gibe. Isn't there a problem that if the establishment pays you, if you're the mashgiach, not you, but if the person's a mashgiach, and the establishment pays you, isn't that a problem?
That so that's another very, this was something, if you know a little bit of history of New York, this was something that Rabbi Yaakov Yosef, he was the first and only chief rabbi of New York. He was Talmud of the Chafetz Chaim. So when he was trying to up, this was about 100 years ago, early 1900s, late 18, early 1900s, when he was trying to up these kosher standards, he was trying to change the, you know, because when the owner pays the mashgiach directly, sometimes that can cause a little bit of a conflict of interests. That's why most kashruyot, most reliable kashruyot, they get paid from the hashgacha, or the hashgacha is involved in the payment, because then the owner has much less leverage over the mashgiach than if he's paid directly by the owner. But again, even with that, there are exceptions to the rule, but at the end of the day, the hashgacha has to call the shots with that. Yeah, last question, because I want to say it for a time. Yeah.
So I heard the story one time, like two of my friends are trying to get jobs as a shield at like a meal in
dairy place, okay.
And
were they religious?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
The owner was like you know, old guy who had some problem with parnasa.
Okay.
And he was saying like, oh, we're bringing this in, but they're not up to the kashrut standards that they're supposed to be.
Okay.
Just don't say.
Okay.
How are they supposed to handle it?
They must, by virtue of their capacity, they must warn the owner not to bring it in. If he brings it in anyway, they must report it immediately to the kashrut agency.
Is there any way to get the bad mosar before?
Before he brings it in, yes.
What do you do?
Once he brings it in, he's toast.
Doesn't that?
Especially if he was warned. Yeah. Yeah. So, again.
All right.
Rabotai, there's a very, very delicate balance between people's parnasa and feeding people, feeding other Jews things that are not necessarily trash, but not up to par. Yeah.
Rabbi, is it normal for the mashkiach to go around and buy stuff for the store?
Could be.
A lot of times, yes, that's acceptable.
It depends what, but yes, it could happen. Yes, if he brings receipts and invoices and stuff, yes.
But he's leaving the store without a mashgiach.
I mean, it depends what it is, but if there's cameras and it's really quick, it's, you know, if he's being sent on a mission, you know, sometimes if the owner sends the mashgiach, he says, yeah, I want you to go to Costco, and he gives him a four-hour shopping, that's a little, you know. That's
yeah, I'm not talking about that. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, but if it's, you know, he's going next door to grab some tomatoes, so that seems okay. Yeah, no. After 24 hours, they're kasher. That's Mishnah Berurah at the end of Siman Taf Petet in Orach Chaim. And it's Magen Abraham, Mishnah Berurah, Kaf HaChaim holds that even if something was used with Chadash products, after, I mean, Safek Chadash, at least meaning in Chutz La'aretz, let's say, so after 24 hours, there's enough Sfekot to rely on to use those Kelim, even without kasher. So. So that's the Safek Sfeka. And Yabi Omer Chileke Yored De'asiman Himal would only apply to the Abad situations, which means you're invited somewhere for Shabbat. You're invited to a Simcha. It would not apply to going and purchasing actual lechatchila, purchasing meat, ordering something in a restaurant. Those are called lechatchila situations to which the Safek Sfeka would not apply. Yeah, yeah, if you're invited, that's already considered the Abba. So, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, you kind of set them up. You kind of set, and especially, you know, you have to understand, you know, what are you going to do? Sometimes you set up the mashgiach. Sometimes there's a language barrier. Sometimes, you know, he's nervous. But if that happened to me, I personally would walk out, but not everybody. I wouldn't say you're chayav to walk out. I would say, can you take me to the back? To the kitchen. Huh? You can ask him if the pizza's glad. Yeah, I mean, there's no end to this, Rabotai, but the point is, moral of the story, Rabotai, moral of the story. Yeah, moral of the story is, Rabotai, keep your eyes open. Do not be naive. Do not be bullied. Do not be, you know, we're not, the community, the Jewish community, the firm Jewish community, is not a bunch of sitting ducks. Okay, and don't look at yourself like that, and don't allow anyone to beat you into submission. Ma'alim bakodesh, huh? Again, no. But the point is, do not surrender to anybody. You have the right to ask for whatever you want, and if it's not up to par, you know, we live in a country where the customer is always right, and eventually, if enough people demand it, the owners and the establishments will get with the program. That's the way it works. So, you know, feel free. B'derech Eretz, obviously. B'derech Eretz. Not to be, you know, belligerent or oppositional or confrontational. It doesn't need that. Afilu b'derech Eretz, but, you know, stand your own. So, we'll stop for a moment. And how do you do this? I want to give a dratar now on the parsha. It's a little late, but that's okay. How do you do this? Anybody know? No, 1 second, 1 second. Stop.
Simon! No, you guys want Simon to.
Let me try.
Very kind.